The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. Lydia Talks Starman, and it's presented by Comics League International. We are international. You know, because I'm from one country, you're from another country, and here we are both in a third country where we're talking about Starman issue number two.
Number two. Sins of the Father Part Three. Mercy.
Dun dun dun. And you know, We've been having a few little tech errors. This is actually our second go at this beginning. So we're going to try and give you the best sound quality that my humble tech skills know how to make. So just kind of bear with us today. Just kind of bear with us.
Yes, please. We seek your consideration and kindness.
And we also seek to let you know about what was going on in the world around the time Starman issue number two came out. Now this issue has a little bit of a date thing going on because the cover date is December 95.
That really threw me off.
because the issue before was November of 94, and then the next issue number three is also November 94, and then issue number four is the February 95. So I'm pretty sure this is supposed to be December of 94, and that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Typo.
I know. Cursed typos.
DC Comics! Where is your QC, DC? Oh my, that was like a dad joke.
Okay. I'm going to move on and say that in December, we had a few things going on. In it, we had Ernest Zedillo taking office as president of Mexico.
Congratulations, Ernesto!
And we also had the trial of former president Mengistu begins in Ethiopia. And I'll be honest, I didn't click the link to see what he was guilty of, or accused of at trial for. We had this is probably the most interesting thing to me because it just kind of illustrates how the times have changed. The first version of web browser Netscape Navigator was released on December 15th.
Very cool.
Do you remember when Netscape was when the Navigator was like the browser to use?
Yeah, I actually do. Yeah. It was like the other browser.
Yeah, and it had the pirate wheel, right?
Yes.
And I was like, man, it's got a you know, I just opened up their Wikipedia page to see what websites looked like back then.
Uh-huh.
And I'll be honest, they don't look too different from most Japanese websites today.
Uh-oh. Okay, I'm not going to make any irrelevant comments, but
And did you have some news you wanted to share?
Well, yes, but Palau becomes a member of the UN on the 15th as well. Yay, Palau! I don't know what the listeners would consider as news, but there were actually a lot of things according to onthisday.com. Ooh. And Cindy Crawford and Richard Gere announced they are separating on December 1st. Aww.
Sad day.
Yeah. And then there's this guy called Daryl Strawberry who keeps popping up. Yeah. So that's, he was probably like the hottest topic in, I guess, in the U.S. or something.
Was this December. Drugs or doping or steroids or
tax evasion? I think
or that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess this led to some sort of like baseball thing, because on the 23rd, after he pled not guilty, baseball owners, they imposed a salary cap. And according to this website, it was fiercely opposed by players.
I wonder why.
Yeah. But, you know, it was in 1994, and I'm not as interested in these events as Starman!
Yes. So let's talk some Starman.
Yes, let's talk some Starman. I am supposed to do the synopsis today, and I actually have it written out. I haven't rehearsed any of it, so you guys have to bear with me. I hope I don't stumble. So, shall I?
Yes, please.
Okay, so Starman issue 2, right? Issue 2. Sins of the Father Part 3. It's called Mercy, and here is my synopsis. Dun dun dun. Jack wants to fix all the crap that's going on in Opal City, and yet is still in denial about his calling to Starmandom. Nevertheless, he suits up in the most unconventional way, even pinning on a sheriff's badge he got in the Cracker Jack box. So, Jack is suited up, and he fixes crap in Opal. He punches people, and he's really good at it.
Punch!
We're informed of Opal's architecture. All its roofs are connected. It's like a city up there, direct quote. Meanwhile, the Mist and Shade have a hilarious conversation in which the seemingly geriatric Mist keeps getting his friends' names mixed up. We manage to establish, though, that they both want to do bad things. This means they're going to screw Starman over, the scoundrels.
Scoundrels.
So, what's Starman up to now? He's still kicking bad guy ass on Opal's rooftop canopy, and we find out how he got so good at jujitsu. He then meets a stammering lady, you actually know that she's stammering because of the dialogue, who wants to kill him, but she changes her mind.
What?
Trying to escape from the absurdity of the entire situation, he wanders off into Fortunes, that mysterious shop, I believe appeared in issue 0. That's why you need to start from issue 0, you guys. Details, details, details. So, Fortune's lady, her name is Charity, and she's from the South. I had quite a fun time imagining her Southern accent. She has a wicked vision and basically informs Jack Knight that he is going to be a fantastic Starman, and his life will be fraught with danger.
Dun, dun, dun.
Danger. So Jack meets up with Ted Knight, his dad, at the hospital, and he tells Ted about all the crazy. Ted then sends him to grab a conveniently available prototype of the cosmic rod in a warehouse type of place where we find out about Ted's hoarding obsession.
Wow, that's an obsession.
Yeah, there's a lot of old stuff. So no wonder his late wife has a section in the museum. No wonder Jack's a junk dealer. It's a family thing. I guess the question is, was David adopted? Anyway, Jack trawls through Ted's old stuff a little bit and finds the cosmic prototype in number 17. It must be a cupboard or something, which is a lot longer and presumably heavier than the ones Jack managed to conveniently lose. While Jack is at the warehouse, however, the bad guys get to Ted at the hospital and take him away. They don't kill him, however, because they want to use Ted to get to Jack. They ring Jack up at the hospital and tells him, and he tells them, he will do anything to get his father back. And then he thinks, even if it means he has to try to be a hero. Cue dramatic imaginary fade out, and the rest is in the next issue.
To be concluded.
Dun dun dun.
Wow.
How's that?
That was fine. I liked it. I liked it.
Okay. Sorry. No. Yes.
So, yes. I guess let's start with the with the cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good cover.
I like it. It's very the details though. You're talking about the oh wait, that's the first page. The cover is the one with him holding the rod, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't pick up on it. I was like, ooh, he has a new weapon, but actually it's not a new weapon.
Well, it's, you know, it's kind of new.
Yeah, okay.
Because he gets it this issue.
Okay.
You know.
But it's, like, the prototype, right? That means it's, like, the first version? Is that what prototype means?
I think so. It's, like, the one he made to, yeah.
Like but a test drive thing?
It's new to Jack. It's new to Jack.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We get the Shade looking nice and evil and the laughing shadow demons creeping in.
I've just noticed the shadow demons.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sorry about the coughing, by the way.
Oh, no worries. I can probably chop those out.
Okay. All right. No more coughing.
No more coughing. Forbidden.
Yes. Banned.
So the story starts and I like all the little like when he's kind of going through his collection and Cracker Jack toys. You know, we can see stuff from Mickey Mouse and kind of the profile of the Shadow, a pulp character that's come out a long time. Maybe something that's, you know, Batman-ish, hard to say.
Huh. It never struck me as that. I was, like, busy looking at Dante's Inferno on the bedside table, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then this is, because he's got the same type of things on his board. I guess, that's where he got it from. It's on his pincushion, or corkboard.
Yeah. We're looking at the scene where he's set. Where exactly is he? Is this his house?
I guess so. I guess this would be his, maybe his bedroom?
Oh, it's his apartment. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Why is it so messy? Wait, I don't remember what happened. Was his apartment attacked at all?
No, just his junk store.
Oh, okay. So, but why? Because there's that scene where he's like, using a flashlight, right? And why doesn't he just switch on the lights? Is he on the run or something?
I think so, because, you know, I mean, he and his family, they've been targeted. So he's trying to keep a low profile by just sneaking into his own apartment.
Oh, okay.
And getting things he needs and kind of dressing for battle.
Right. Okay. I see. Now that we've established that. Cracker Jack. Besides the Cracker Jack Sheriff's badge, he wears this jacket. It's funny how I feel like as he makes these choices, he's thinking about his father and how his father would like these things, you know?
Yeah.
And it's
how he's paying homage to his father and the legacy, but with his own spin on it.
Right, yeah.
With the astrology instead of astronomy. But, Dad might like it.
Yeah. So, and when he found the Cracker Jack Sheriff's badge, I thought that was
Now you're from Singapore. Do they have Cracker Jacks?
Yeah, I've never heard of it. I've never heard of Singapore having. Yeah, I think right in at the back of my mind, it appeared in movies and TV shows and such, but
the baseball song, "Buy Me Some Peanuts and Cracker Jack."
Oh, right. Oh, is that what, Take Me to the Ball Game or something?
Yeah, Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Right.
And it's, I'm pretty sure it's been so long since I've had Cracker Jack that it's like, usually I want to say it's like peanuts and like popcorn and a few other just like a crunchy, kind of slightly sweetened, like a caramel popcorn snack.
Yeah.
That's there. So, you know, and usually it has like a small toy in it. So a Cracker Jack prize.
Okay, well, but I don't know if you guys have heard this already, but just this recording is what May is being done on May 3rd, I think. May 4th.
May 4th.
And just like 20...
May the 4th be with you, Star Wars Day.
Oh my god. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. This is a real thing. It's May 4th. You're supposed to. So in a way, we're talking about Starman, and he's kind of in a gang war. So we're doing our part.
Okay, I'm glad we are. It's I think a little over 24 hours ago, Frito-Lay announced that Cracker Jacks will not come with physical prizes anymore. How what do you think about that as someone who actually grew up with Cracker Jacks?
I mean, you know, Cracker Jack toys are kind of known for being crap. So so it's not, I mean, you know, like here's a little lumpen, misshapen piece of plastic. Like, nothing on his wall that might be Cracker Jack toys were ever anything I got out of Cracker Jacks. It would be like a little plastic animal that you have to kind of guess, maybe this is an elephant.
Oh.
What are they replacing it with?
That bad, huh?
Like, yeah.
The quality is must not be very good, but you know, the way they drew it on the comic.
it's possible that since he's a junk collector, maybe he had like Cracker Jack toys from like back when they actually used to put stuff in there. That would be my kind of way to argue it, is like, oh, here's like an actual piece of metal with a metal spike in it that can go through the leather jacket he's putting it on.
Whereas I
grew up in the 80s, and it would be like, hey, here's your, I don't know, piece of plastic
crap. Okay, I see. Huh, I never thought about that. So there was once upon a time where Cracker Jack prizes were actually decent, and
they
then
probably were.
It became plastic, and then now they are just a QR code.
Would you use the QR code? Like, what do you get with? I'm so confused.
There's a mobile app that Cracker Jack has launched or something that you can. I know, you use the QR code and you go onto the app, and that's basically all that I researched. But
let's go to Starman.
Let's go to Starman. Okay. Now Starman, he is, well, I don't know if we should call him Starman because he's still in denial.
Yeah, he's still Jack. He's still Jack at this point.
Still Jack, right? So
he's almost there. He's almost there. He's got his most of his look down. You know, the rod was still going to get some aesthetic changes to give you a little preview of the future. But the anti-flare goggles, the leather jacket, you know, he's now officially 90s cool, I think.
Huh. 90s cool.
Oh man. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, the color suddenly changes though in the comic because it's all like shadows and stuff. And then the other page. I'm looking at the other page. Oh, but before I go to the other page, there's this guy outside his window. Creepy.
Yeah.
He is. What that? That was that. Looking at that panel made me realize that Jack was actually snooping in his house because he was saying about the guy outside the window was talking about. He was reporting to someone saying that, yeah, the lights are off, but I can see his flashlight moving around. So, I guess it really sets the mood for the beginning of this issue, because we realize that there's a certain gravity to the whole situation, I think.
Yeah, and also it's, not only does it set the gravity, but we kind of get another example of Jack not being capable yet. Because, you know, right before the guy is on the phone saying, like, yeah, he's up there, the lights are off, but I can see his flashlight moving around, Jack is thinking, like, yeah, I didn't see anybody watching the place, but, you know, I don't really know what to look for. They're letting us know he's not suddenly good at everything.
Right. Yeah, And that's important. I think I've talked about it in the previous episode where I just suddenly, he got so good so fast. But in this issue, it explains why. So that was satisfying. Probably not there yet.
Nope. But we are at in this series, the first meeting between the Shade and the Mist.
Oh, this is probably my favorite part of the entire issue.
Really good.
Yeah.
Just two characters with a history talking, and one is obviously not quite there.
Yeah. And the one, just in case you guys missed it in the synopsis, it's the Mist. He just kind of mixes people up. So rude.
Now, does the Mist possibly being like all like the beginning of like dementia? Does that kind of make him more tragic, or is he still just a weird, sicky creep out?
You know what? I never thought about that. I never thought that he was in turning, like his age was affecting his evilness. I think but you know, at the end of it all, he's probably still sick and creepy because he's bent on, what is his purpose? He just wants to be, for Shade, he's very explicit about how he wants to do bad things for the sake of doing bad things. But for the Mist, what's in it for him? You know? So,
because we still don't know what the Mist's plan is.
Yeah. So,
with the Shade on his side. I do love how you mentioned, like, the coloring in this. We go from the earlier issues, which have a lot more kind of like blues and the like colder colors, but here we get here and it's this sickly yellow green. Like it just makes me think of poison.
Yeah. Poison and biochemicals.
Yes, which is a great combination for the Mist, who just comes off in this like sickly, like white with a little bit of creamy heads, like age splots.
Yeah, it almost looks like there's skin flaking off his face. Yeah,
like a vampire, one might think.
Yeah. Oh, but beside the Shade, he looks nothing like a vampire. The Shade does look like your stereotypical vampire, though. Shade. Is there a "the" in front of his name? Or is it just Shade?
I think it can be Shade or the Shade. Either one works. Now, one thing about this is the last page of the two characters talking before we jump back to Jack. I like how there's the little bits of acting between the two of, you know, we have them talking and you have the Shade kind of like, oh, don't worry, I get them mixed up too. I'm sure they say the same about us. And then it's just another panel of the Shade taking the sip and just looking at the Mist. And it's hard to say how much of this is me reading into it and how much is there, but there is that whole kind of like feeling that he's not quite in sync with what the Mist wants. You know, there's doesn't seem to be trust between the two of them.
Yeah. Yeah, you know how I assume what do you call it? Do you call it panels? You know, every panel has a meaning to it, and the fact that they just put it there without any dialogue and just him looking like, okay, old geezer. that's quite loaded, I think. And I don't know, I really like this entire exchange because they quote Shakespeare and there's like interesting banter, and we find out a lot of things about about Shade, because like he doesn't age, and why he wants to bring down, well, eventually Starman, but why he wants to, you know, attack the city and stuff like that. Mm. Does he want to attack the city, or does he want to protect it? I can't remember.
Well, I'm not sure if it's been fully revealed yet exactly what side the Shade is on. Because he is a villain, but he was shown protecting the museum, or at least keeping people from harming the museum, but he also took his own little piece from it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of in between.
Right.
But who definitely wants to protect it is Jack, who's punching people in the face.
On the rooftop. I like the rooftop detail. I don't know. I like stuff like that. Like, they just mentioned it so nonchalantly. Like, this roof world up here where every eave, arch, and stretch of tile is joined to somewhere, leads to somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know? There's, like, dedicated dialogue to it.
Yeah. I mean, it further explores that Opal City is as much a character in this book as Jack or Shade or Mist.
Yeah. So we, what kind of architecture is this? Gothic?
I think so. I'm not too big on architecture. It's either Gothic or Art Deco.
But yeah, you can imagine if you've never read the comic books, but you're following us on this conversation, you can imagine all these connected rooftops and people fighting on them.
Yeah, and Jack just kind of running through, taking care of the masked, the little like Raggedy Andy masked villains. And he almost seems to be having fun with it.
Yeah. But there are people shooting guns at him, right? Like, yeah, those look like bullets. Blim, blim.
Blim, blim.
Blim, blim. Why is it blim, though? Isn't it, like... No. Are those supposed to be, like, gunshots?
I think so.
Why are gunshots blim, blim, not bang, bang?
Well, it's going for more, I guess, stylized, because if you make the blim, blim, you know.
Ah, I see. That's interesting. Onomatopoeia in different countries always fascinates me. Dun, dun. Okay. Yeah. Oh, but Jack says that he's screwing up in this, which I thought was strange because he looked like he knew what he was doing.
Well,
so.
Yeah, but I mean, the point of his screwing up here, at least to me, because he mentions how like he came up to the roofs because he thought it would be there would be safety on the roofs. You know, he thought he'd just go up there and kind of, haha, look how clever I'm being. I'm using the roofs.
Okay.
And then he just, you know, runs in there. I thought if my apartment was being watched, that they'd be waiting in the street, not. And then he kind of changes topics. We're getting more of that fragmented.
I see.
The dialogue we're talking about. So he thought it just, like, this would be his way to escape being shot at, instead of being shot at a lot.
Okay. Yeah. I see, I get it now. But he takes out the bad guys on the rooftop.
But then he runs into the bad girls. Or girls,
that
singular.
That really threw me off. There is no explanation of who she is. I don't think they even mentioned her name, right?
No, because we didn't see. Did we see? We didn't see her last issue. We haven't seen her since the Zero issue.
She appeared in the Zero issue?
Yes, she did.
Oh no! Details.
I know, because we have that scene where they're all three of them are together. Nash, Kyle, and Mist.
Okay. I remember her now. She's the one. Okay. So. She spares his life.
Yeah.
Because of what we don't know.
Yeah, it's... Why do you think?
What did she say? Something about luxury, affording some luxury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, before my father's men see what I'm going, what I'm doing, and then I have to kill you. Go, while we can both afford ourselves that luxury.
Hmm. What does that mean? I mean, both of us afford that luxury. What's going to happen to her, you know?
Well, I was... I was thinking, because right now none of the men are watching, you know, she doesn't have to take the action. She has the freedom of choice and to kind of act out her conscience. She doesn't want to... she doesn't necessarily want to do it. Like, when he asks why is she going to kill... when Jack asks Nash why she's going to kill him, she kind of mentions that, you know, their fathers hate each other. That they're the foot soldiers, or the chorus. That's why she's taking it. And then he's like, no, but why are you killing me? And she just kind of thinks about it. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see, like, she doesn't have a reason why she would kill him. So, but, and since no one's there, no one's there to kind of tell her dad.
I see.
She had a
chance
to kill
him. So there must be something that would happen to her if she doesn't kill him.
Mm. So Jack, after he gets away from Nash, he gets to the Fortunes and Forbidden Tales.
Right. And there's a, like, psychic person inside. Charity.
Mm.
Brent can do her southern accent really well.
a little bit. Like, because being from North Florida and Georgia, then I can try and do the, down south I had a house, big and damp. Locals had a name for it. The Dark Mansion, they called it. And they'd come to hear my stories, my forbidden tales. Actually, that was just a name forbidden. I coined for them. You like the forbidden tales. You like the forbidden, don't you?
Yeah, I liked it.
So what I really like about these pages is with, you know, we have the stark white backgrounds and we have the colors on it. They're just popping so much. The greens, the pinks, the yellows. And the figures also seem really close up. And there's something about the whole thing that gives it this almost like a hazy, dreamlike quality.
Yeah. It's like suddenly everything is a haven.
Mm-hmm.
Even for the reader, the colors, the dialogue, because I don't know, to me a southern accent is like, it's kind of like a lullaby. It's very slow and it's trawling across, you know, the page, and I don't know, it just feels like the pace slows down very dramatically in these few pages.
Yeah, and even, you know, we're getting lots of kind of six panel grids here. Which, after the kind of the fight scenes where it's a bit more of a dynamic panel construction, and then we have here where it, again, like you said, it kind of slows things down until we get to her prophecy.
Yeah, and then it looks really weird because there's a lot of the color scheme of the visions that she experiences is very similar to the one that that you see in the poisonous one, the one between shade and mist, and it's strange. I wonder if there's a hint, you know, there's a link between, you know, danger and these colors, and how she sees Starman in dangerous situations.
Yeah, or between, I don't know, magic or kind of slightly supernatural, because even though the mist is a being of science, there is something slightly supernatural about him.
Yeah.
Now I can tell you, without getting too spoilery, that pretty much every kind of thing she mentions in this page does happen over the course of the series, with one little exception, but, you know, pretty much all the stuff she kind of brings up, this is almost like a preview of what's going to happen over the next 80 issues of Starman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We get to know this in issue two. Mm. Okay.
I know.
He goes to Japan, right? Does he?
That would be telling. And I can't remember exactly where the Far East she's talking about is. But, okay. You know.
Okay.
And then we go straight from there to him talking with his dad about his day.
Yeah, he goes back to hospital to visit his dad, and I think it's very funny how, I love the scene how dad's like making cocoa with marshmallows, and then he's like, oh, I remember that there's a rod.
Yeah. And I like this scene between them too, because it's a much better relationship on these pages mm-hmm. than they were the last time we saw them together.
Yeah. I think at some point his dad confessed that he was trying to keep Jack out of it, right?
Mm, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so dad's not as big as a jerk as I thought he was.
No. Ted Knight.
Mm.
It's about fathers and sons.
Yeah.
And just, I like the fact that there's that kind of, you can almost see the dad is kind of tweaking his son a little bit. Like, he is making small little, not like mean barbs, but just that kind of like, you know, hey, I'm not a hero. I'm, you know, I am not Starman. Mm. Anyway, I need another cosmic rod. Really? That's just what I'd expect a not Starman to say.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel mean. It's just kind of like, you know, he's like, oh.
He's like goading Jack into action. I think that's the first one. That's what Ted is up to.
Mm.
Yeah.
But he gives him the place to go. Kind of giving his son the next steps to take up the mantle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why in the synopsis I say he goes to the warehouse and then we witness Ted's hoarding obsession. He has a lot of stuff.
Yes, he does. I mean, this is stuff that almost puts the Batcave to shame.
Uh-huh. And before he goes to the warehouse, there's like a very short cut to the mist and shade, right?
Yes.
I really wonder why. Why did the writers choose to put it in like suddenly? You know, is it like a break? It's interesting. If this were a movie or something, it would be very out of place. But maybe. This is a comic book, and it feels very, very natural. Mm. But.
And the way the panels are done, they almost kind of mirror each other, because we have, you know, Jack and Ted, like, if we look at the tops and bottoms of those panels, we got Jack and Ted on the top, and then the mist and shade on the bottom, and they're kind of, their body positionings are almost, you know, flipped.
Oh!
And we got the same where it's just the face shots of Jack and Mist, and again, like, Jack's kind of looking at us from the left, whereas the Mist is looking at us from the right. And then we got the Ted and Shade again. They're slightly mirror images of each other.
Mm. Oh, that is very illuminating. I see. Oh, I see.
And in a way, it's also them kind of planning the next step to see what goes on. So it's, I don't know, I think it's a really good way of kind of reminding us, like, Jack's getting his plan done, but the villains are still there, and they're not just biding their time.
Right. Okay. Ah, okay. Interesting. Hmm. Alright, and then we move to the warehouse.
Yes. I wonder who he fought who used the giant scissors.
Oh, I never noticed that. Who? I don't know.
Scissor Man!
There's a Scissor Man?
Probably at some point.
Okay. Scissor Man? But it was. I like the part where he found a costume. Sorry, Dad, no way.
Yeah.
Maybe I could, no.
No.
He found, so he doesn't want to wear the traditional Starman costume.
Not really a spandex guy.
Mm-hmm. I made a mistake. It was not a cupboard. It was a... What do you call these? Like, it's a huge warehouse, but...
Yeah, like a warehouse with a storage closet? Storage. I don't know.
Yeah. He opens the shutters of number 17, and there's a lot of stuff even in number 17. But he manages to find the prototype.
And now he's got his cosmic rod, and he's armed, and he's taken to the skies. Again, like, we just get some more great colors of, you know, since we have this whole scene of Jack in that faded blue, once he gets the rod, and we've got that bright yellow and the red of his shirt, and it kind of makes this moment feel more important to me.
Yeah. And I don't know if... this is just Starman, or it's other comics as well, but there are a lot of shadows in this entire comic the way, like, it's the faces are always shrouded in some kind of shadowing and like dark black parts of the face. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's something, like, it feels very eerie in a sense.
Well, that was in the Omnibus collection to this. One of the things the writer, James Robinson, writes about is that when they were looking for artists for this series, he really wanted, even though it was Starman and taking place at night, he wanted to make sure whoever they got as the artist really knew how to use shadows and use darkness. Not just to kind of, you know, very bright, very, haha, I'm Starman, and there will be no darkness here. He wanted the fact of, like, using those shadows, using those night colors, that would make it more Starman.
Right. Oh, I see. Mm. It really works. I like how it...
And
yeah, like the part where Ted is attacked. There's this panel, the last one, the bottom right one, where he's bleeding. I know he's bleeding, but the way that it's drawn, I can't really describe it. It's like clouds. Do you see the clouds?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I like that. That's how we kind of know it's the Shade who's there. In those series of panels, we almost see the shadows that are on Ted's face recede, and then they splash back with the Shade's appearance.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, so creepy.
Yeah.
So creepy and so nice.
Yep. And we got the Shade's admonition to tell Jack Knight that, you know, not only that he took Ted, but that he didn't kill the cops. Which is kind of, again, what side is Shade really on right now?
Right. He spared no thought killing the thieves in the past issue, right? You remember when he was like this huge dog or something? But he spared the life of this O'Dare guy and Ted. So, yeah. But he's with Mist, right? Right now. Like,
he seems to be.
Yeah, because I think they brought Ted to both Mist... he brought Ted to Mist, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
With the Starman party hat on.
I know, right? I was like, whoa, why did... Like, that... It just feels very humiliating.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a very grown up piece of fiction. I think kids, if they read this they wouldn't get why there's a Starman hat on his head.
Just the mockery in it, and you know, I really like this whole thing of Jack wanting to sound tough, to sound scary, to, you know, wanting to kind of let them know that he's not like going to play by the rules they expect.
He can be unscrupulous.
But he just doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, even to himself, he doesn't sound genuine.
Whatever he sums up in the last page goes directly against what he says to them, because he says he's not a hero, he's not Starman, but on the last page he says that just this time he has to try to be a hero for his father, for his city. He's fighting for something. There's a greater purpose to his fight. You know, this is not, it didn't stop at saving Ted, it was for Opal.
Yeah.
And he was very convicted about it. So I think that I'm quite looking forward to the next issue, because it will show how he becomes Starman, perhaps.
And every time I look at this last panel of the way the word, the kind of thought bubbles scroll down to him, and it's Jack just staring at the end of the cosmic rod. I don't know, it gives me a little chill there of, like, you can see the kind of determination but also uncertainty in the scene, and there's the kind of power there, but I really like this page. And the sense of the father line is to be concluded next issue.
There's also this, the most prominent thing on this page is the star on his back.
Yes.
Why? I mean, I know there must be something to it, but I just can't put my finger on it.
I like that one. It is a cool design. It looks nice. But we also have Jack staring at the cosmic rod, the thing of science, and here he is talking about how, you know, he needs to be a hero, which is a hero is something that's a bit more than just the science of it. And then we have that signal on his back of kind of, you know, star signs and the different constellations of it. So it's him kind of having to, he can't just rely on the science and power of it, but he has to kind of bring something a bit more from the soul if he wants to succeed. Would be kind of my hopefully passable answer for why it's as prominent.
Okay. I see. I accept that answer.
You know, but I mean, like that's just my interpretation. And, you know, there's probably a bunch of other, probably better explanations as well, you know.
It looks like a compass, too.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's, you know, he needs to find direction and stuff like that.
Because I think that's, I think this is also like a kind of, like a mariner's, not star, like, as well, isn't it? Kind of like for travel.
Oh, okay.
I think I'll look it up and hopefully remember to put it in next episode.
All right. Yeah.
So what do you think of this? Is our third issue? What are your thoughts?
I'm liking it so far. I'm actually interested to find out about Jack. I want to know what happens to him. And of course, because of all the visions that Charity had, I want to see what happens, like how those things take place. Yeah, and whether Ted dies, I hope Ted doesn't die. There's just a lot of things that a lot of detail. I want to know about his mom too. Adele, how she died, why she's fond of museum artifacts. Stuff like that,
I mean, I just keep going back to this, and I'll probably keep going through this as we go through the series, but, you know, it's a good plot, and of course it's well written, but the thing that I think is the strength of this series, and, you know, this comes through the writing and things as well, but it's the relationships that are formed between the characters, both good and evil, that really propel this for me. That it's, you know, there's that still kind of yet unexplored relationship between Mist and Ted, and of course it's the father-son thing, and then the two families that are in opposition that really make me want to just rush out and read issue number 3.
Yeah. I think characters, to base a story on characters like these is a really smart move, because any character-driven story is, I don't know. Plot-driven stories and character-driven stories, they're not mutually exclusive.
No.
So with Starman, I do find that the plot and the characters are both very compelling.
Yes.
So that's a good thing. Sometimes, you know, one wins out over the other. But for Starman, it's not like that. Yeah. That's what keeps me interested, because and also because Jack, he's not your conventional superhero. He's not like, okay, I'm a good person, I want to do this. So in a sense, I want to see how he grows into it.
I think you'll enjoy where this series keeps taking us.
Okay, looking forward to it. Yay!
So I guess stay tuned for next time.
Yes.
when we talk issue number 3 of Starman.
Yes, I shall do my homework.
And if you want to leave any comments about this show, I guess for now, probably the easiest place to do would be to find the Comics League International page on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a kind of a post for this show, and just leave a comment there.
Mm-hmm.
Would be the easiest thing, I think.
Is it facebook.com/Comics League International?
Yes, it is. And Comics League International is all one word.
Okay. Yes, that's where you'll find us.
Huzzah! Okay. And any place they can find you on the web?
You can find me on YouTube, on Twitter, on Facebook. My usernames are all the same. It's Quek Channel, spelled Quek Channel. And I'm most active on Twitter, so I respond most quickly there. Yay!
Excellent. And you can find me, all my names are different because I don't plan very well. You can find me at Twitter, which is at Dead Troubadour. And my main blog website is deadlytroubadour.com, which is, you know, based on my book, Deadly Troubadours.
Yay!
So that, I had fun.
Me too, always.
All right. And we hope you had fun, and we hope you tune in next time.
Next time. Dun, dun, dun.
Bye.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.